find the word helpless. Listen to this, helpless. This is the word used in Romans 5, 6. Helpless. Unable to help oneself. Well, let me repeat that. Unable to help oneself. Weak or dependent. Oh, a dependent person. Leaning upon or wishing upon a God who is unable to help because he's castrated himself, locked himself out of human life altogether because he can't influence anybody. That's a deadly combination. Being dependent on God and then God not being able to do anything, that's a rough combination right there. That's going to damn a lot of people to hell. What a pity, too. Unable to help oneself, weak or dependent, deprived of strength or power. Powerless. Yeah, let's just get right to the point. Instead of deprived of power, how about powerless, incapacitated? So according to this so-called general invitation teaching, the main Christian teaching, God invites you in. It's a general invitation. The assumption is that we must have the power to accept the invitation. I'm going to get to that in a second. God offers helpless sinners a general invitation to accept his son. I'm assuming most of you caught the absurdity of that, but in case there are some Christians watching, I understand. I'm going to spell it out for you. The absurdity, did you catch that, of expecting helpless people to do something? Expecting helpless people to do something. That's also a big problem. Besides people dependent on a God who cannot do anything on their behalf. Oh, he can't. If he does, then he's violated the vaunted free will. So you're upstairs in this burning house, lying unconscious on the floor. Helpless. Romans 5, 6, I remind you. But you better hurry. You better what? God's outside waiting, and you better hurry because this buggy's moving on. God's not going to wait forever for you. Because once God pulls out of the driveway, your chance to get in the car is over. I totally forgot to tell you about Faith, about the meetings there. I really didn't get any details. I was so excited to have the kids in the studio yesterday, Jake and Ariana Hill, that I completely forgot about it. So I'm going to take care of that today. Wah, 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 wah. Yeah, boy, wasn't that something? I tell you that, Ariana, she's something else, right? She's got the truth there, man. If I need a vacation day, I'm going to have her fill in. That'd be a lot of fun. She talks with that little lisp, just cute as can be. Hi, everybody. This is Martin Zender, and we're going to finish up in Ezekiel 37 today after I tell you about faith. Great meeting. Thanks to Alan Hess once again for teaching that ecclesia. There were, on average, 80 people in attendance. Largest group, you know, I've ever spoken to. And it's about as big as it's going to get, I think. So people there are just fun. They're knowledgeable. They're friendly. They talk like strangely, you know, like y'all. And y'all come back now here. Just lovely, actually. I was joking to say strange. It's lovely. I love that. Love that North Carolina accent. Just pure heaven to me. And Waylon and Regina Dabbs came up from Fort Lauderdale, and they're from that region. They're from that area. That's where they met Alan Hess. They're all from North Carolina. And Waylon introduced Alan Hess to the truth, and Alan Hess has taken it to his congregation. Amazing that these ex-Baptists, and boy, you got to watch the videos. Go to studyshelf.com. I don't know if Aaron has them up yet, but on Sunday morning, Clyde gave a heck of a talk on the horrors of eternal torment, and he got more Baptist than I've ever heard him. I mean, that guy went in the full Baptist mode. He pulled out all the stops,
scared me for a couple times there, but it's really powerful testimony. Well, he was surrounded by ex-Baptists, so, and he was in North Carolina, so he just channeled the Baptist spirit, but with the right message, Clyde did. So I really enjoy that on Sunday morning. So go to studyshelf.com. I haven't looked at it yet. I don't listen to my talks after I'm done with them. Once is enough for me, but listen to Clyde's because it was really great. They were all good, but Sunday morning was fantastic. And then spending some extra couple days with Dan Sheridan and Alan Hess, that was a good time of a fellowship. I lingered. I'm a lingerer. I'm one of those lingerers. I got to admit that. I like to hang out. I'm a hangout kind of guy. And again, my computer was screwing up for real. The speakers wouldn't work. And what else was... Oh, my mouse wouldn't work. It helps to replace the batteries on those things. Anyway, decided to take the week off for these shows. So from now on, I'm going to try to announce that. I'm going to try to plan when I take the time off so that you're not taken aback, so I don't abruptly abandon you, or you don't feel abandoned, because I don't want you to feel that way. But here we are, we're back, full week of shows, going to finish up two shows today and tomorrow on the Lost Ten Tribes. Verse 25, Ezekiel 37, and they shall live on the land that I gave to Jacob my servant. That's the only land this could possibly be, is Israel, it's the Middle East, it's the land of Jerusalem. Jerusalem, by the way, happens to be the geographical center of the earth. You know, he arranged all the nations around his people Israel. There's a verse that says something like that. Well, it's literal. Every nation is arranged around the centerpiece, which is Israel. It's the geographic center of the earth. Like some place in Iowa is the geographical center of the 48 states. Well, Jerusalem's the geographical center of the landmass of the planet Earth. And the kingdom is going to be run from there someday. Won't the preterists be surprised? In which your fathers lived, and they will live on it, they and their sons' sons. For the eon. And David, my servant, shall be their prince for the eon. David is going to be raised, as I mentioned yesterday. And I will make a covenant, verse 26. I'll make a covenant of peace with them. It will be an aeonian covenant with them. It's going to last for the eon, the thousand-year kingdom eon, eon number four. And I will place them and multiply them and will set my sanctuary in their midst for the eon. In other words, the temple is going to be back. And there are going to be sacrifices as a memorial to teach the nations. Remember, I told you, the nations are going to be in the place in the kingdom where Israel has been now, in a place of learning about God. Israel will have finally mastered it because God put the law in their hearts, and now they're going to teach the nations. So the nations are going to be learning through the sacrifices like Israel was supposed to learn through the sacrifices. Verse 27, my dwelling place also will be with them. I will be their God. They will be my people. How can you tell, God? Because he's God. They will be my people. How can you tell? I used to tell my kids, you guys are going to bed at 9 o'clock. How can you tell? That was Luke. How can you tell? because I'm going to send you there. I'm the small g God. I'm the Lord of my domain. That's why. And my dwelling place will be with them. I will be their God. They will be my people. How can you tell? Because he's El, subjects, lovingly. He's a benign subjector. And the nations will know that I am the Lord who sanctifies Israel. How can you tell? When my sanctuary is in their midst for the eon. That's Ezekiel 37. That's a pregnant chapter. So is 36. Having to do with how God's going to bring the house of Israel, which has been lost to itself even, back to the land, and rejoin it with the house of Judah. The house of Judah, you might say, is established. The recognizable Jews in Jerusalem, even though there are very, 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 very few of them who are real, true Jews. They might be Jews, you know, in name only. I mean, Abraham had two sons, you know. One out of bondage, one out of promise. Actually, the son out of bondage, Ishmael, or the Arabs. The Arabs and the Jews are still fighting. That's because Ishmael and Isaac fought. It's this fraternal strife come down to modern day. That's why you still have the enmity between the seeds of Abraham. So the true sons of Abraham are the sons of faith. And yes, you can be a son of faith in the circumcision. We're of the faith of Abraham. We have faith like Abraham in that he believed the declaration of God. True Israelites also have faith It's the faith in accord with the circumcision gospel must be accompanied by works and law keeping. Of course, a true Israelite can't keep the law today because there's no temple, but they can hold fast to the law in expectation that when the Lord returns, he will write the law on their hearts and they will do it flawlessly. Israel, be reminded, in the 1,000 years is still in the realm of law, which is why there is no justification. We're still in the realm of forgiveness. People are justified apart from works of law, Romans 3:28. So the only way you can talk about justification is to get rid of law. Anytime you're talking about law, you can't be talking about justification because you're either not doing law or you're doing law. Israel for thousands of years has not done law. When God puts it on their hearts, they're going to do it. So they're still doing law, still in the realm of law, therefore still in the realm of forgiveness. It's like forgiveness is waiting in the wings, but it's not needed because they're doing it perfectly because God's spirit is in them. Now, it reminds me of a trip to Detroit, Michigan. I think the year was 1998 or something like that. And I was invited to speak at a church up there. I think it's called the Bible Restoration Church. It was in a suburb of Detroit. Can't remember which one. Detroit, as the French would say. Can't remember which suburb it was, but it was the Bible Restoration Church. And Jory Brooks was the pastor of that church. And Jory Brooks believed in the salvation of all, and I believed in the salvation of all. And so on that theme, he had me come up to teach. And Dean Huff would attend that church to hear me speak on the salvation of all. And Dean spoke a couple of times. Dean lives in Almont, Michigan, which is only a few miles north of Detroit, 30 or so miles. So I would come up there from Ohio once a month, and Dean would come down, and we'd meet there, and I would teach on the salvation of all. Well, one Sunday, I kind of got tired of making that drive. It was a long haul for me, and I thought, I'm just going to take a chance, because this was an Israelite church, okay? Restoration Bible Church. They believed that they were the lost 10 tribes of Israel, and they were. I actually gave them credit for that, but they had maps of the Holy Land all over the place. Now, mind you, these were not your classic Orthodox Jews. Men did not have dreadlocks. Women did not have head coverings. They weren't dressed in black. They weren't serving lox and bagels and a lamb. But they were zealous for the things of the law. And they had the Ten Commandments posted on the church. And so they were Israelites. And they understood the truths that I've been telling you of the lost 10 tribes. Okay, well, here's what I decided to do. I decided to throw a big rock in their little pond. I was going to teach on justification. But as I just told you, in order to teach on justification, I would have to teach justified apart from law. So I started the talk this way. I said, I recognize that you are part of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. And there was the noise of affirmation. They were very pleased, like, oh, yes. And I know that you recognize your lost identity and that you realize that you're sons of Jacob. Oh, yes. Murmurs of approval throughout the crowd. Very, very positive. And now I turned a corner dramatically, and now I want to tell you why it doesn't matter. Quiet, dead quiet. They didn't like that too much. They were stunned. And I said, you are only aware of justification. I mean, you're only aware of forgiveness. You're only aware of pardon. That's because it's the best thing you have under law. If you transgress the law, which you're all doing by the hour, by the day, you have forgiveness. I want to teach you about justification. And I said, justification can only come apart from law. You can only be justified when you're out of the sphere of law. And then I brought them the example of Paul, who was an Israelite, a Benjamite, a Pharisee of the Pharisees, very proud of his nationality as Saul. And I said, he came to recognize his nationality as refuse, as garbage for the excellency of the high calling of Christ. And I started to preach the high calling of Christ. I started to take them to a celestial destiny. I challenged them to believe a new truth. Well, why shouldn't I? I decided to go for it. Paul went for it. He taught he did teach Israel, like in Hebrews, he's teaching Israel their own message. But I think when he talked to individuals, he brought them the gospel of the uncircumcision to see if any would jump ship. Now, Peter, we know, did not jump ship. Peter heard Paul's message, but he recognized it wasn't for him. And so almost every single person at this church, as I began to teach the gospel of the uncircumcision, I could feel the room change, and they were toning me out. They were phasing me out, and it suddenly got cold, and I suddenly realized I was teaching into a brick wall, and the sweat started to trickle from my forehead, and yet I continued on as the trooper that I am, and I gave them Paul. Why not try? See what happens. Well, I saw what happened. That was the last message I ever delivered at that church. They were Israelites. Okay, I knew they were Israelites. I knew they were literal Israelites, but maybe some would hear their message. Well, in fact, somebody heard their message. Wait till I tell you what happened after that talk. I mean, immediately after it, as I'm dabbing the sweat from my brow, a woman came up to me, and it really pictured for me. It was first century drama, pictured for me the truth of what's happening today, that the circumcision gospel and the uncircumcision gospel are still both going out, contrary to what you might have heard. One is an active evangel, the uncircumcision, one is an evangel in waiting, but I'm going to tell you tomorrow's going to be part 12 of the Lost 10 Tribes of Israel. The last part, I'm going to cram it in, finish it tomorrow, because I got to stop at 12. That's a beautiful Israelite number. If it takes me 20, 25, 30 minutes tomorrow, I'm going to finish this series. Going to leave you in a little bit in suspense. If you want the end of this story before I tell you about it tomorrow, you can read The First Idiot in Heaven. The last chapter, I talk about this event in a suburb of Detroit, Michigan, back in 1996. Stay tuned. Come back here tomorrow, and we're going to finish up this, what I think is a fascinating series that will be a testimony for the eons that God is true to His promises. Yeah, winter is coming on in Pennsylvania already. I know, it's only September. Yeah. Temperature this morning, 34 degrees. That was the overnight low. September 23rd or something like that. Yeah, I know, 34 degrees. I can see my breath coming down from my apartment. Walk over to 410. I mean, it's getting a little ridiculous. Hi, buddy, this is Martin Zenner. One consolation, though. I got one consolation. Yep, my consolation is the Steelers are 0-3. Yeah, sorry, you Steeler fans, but yeah, that makes me happy. You know, it's all Steeler fans over here. People have Steelers on their license plates. They wear jerseys of other people. Ben Roethlisberger jerseys. I don't know why people aren't happy with themselves. They have to take on a alter identity, an alter ego, namely some big chunky dude that can throw a football, Ben Roethlisberger. I don't understand it. But that's the way it is here in Western Pennsylvania. So Steelers are 0-3, and winter's coming on. But I'm going to make it. I'm going to make it. We're going to get through this book of Hebrews, and then we're going to start on the book of Revelation. But for now, I want to go back to Detroit, Michigan. And I want to talk about the talk in Detroit at the Restoration Bible Church, which is an Israelite identity church. Which I congratulated the people for understanding the truths of the lost 10 tribes of Israel. Then I said, and this is why it doesn't matter, and I taught the truths of justification. And they were quite upset with me. This is recap. And they murmured against me, or they were dead quiet. It was very awkward, and I finished my 45-minute address, and the sweat was trickling down my brow. This doesn't happen very often because I'm a cool guy. I just don't sweat much. So that the sweat was coming down my brow, you wouldn't know it from listening to the recording because cool, calm, collected. And yet, the sweat was going up and down on my brow. And I'm standing up there quite alone after the talk. No one's coming up to me. No one's offering to take me to a dinner of ritually slaughtered lamb. Nobody's inviting me to their home to light a menorah. No one is shaloming me or saloming me or sayonara-ing me, no one. And so I'm quite alone. And then a woman began to approach the podium. Here she came. Fairly young woman who was sitting in the back row. the whole time. Very unassuming. Didn't notice her, really. And she's coming up to the podium. I go, okay, here it comes. I'm in big trouble now. Well, here's what happened. She came up to me and said, "Sir, I just want you to know." I'm going, oh my gosh, here it is. I take a deep breath. I'm ready for it. Bring it. Hit me with your best shot. Pat Benatar me. I'm ready. "Sir, I just want you to know that today I heard my message for the first time. I heard my gospel for the first time." This woman had been pre-designated before the eons for membership in the body of Christ. And she sat for 3 years in an Israelite church hearing nothing but the circumcision gospel. And it was okay. It sounded all right, but she wasn't crazy about it. Why? Because she was born with an antenna for the uncircumcision gospel. In my book, I call the uncircumcision gospel 92.1 FM. That's the uncircumcision gospel, 92.1 FM. I compare this to the circumcision gospel, which is, what do I call the circumcision gospel? Let's call it 1100 AM. 1100 AM is a circumcision gospel. And she did not have an antenna given by God at birth to receive that gospel. And so it just kind of went over her head, or she put up with it. She picked bits and pieces out of it, but she had an antenna for 92.1. Oh, in the book I say 1400 AM. That's it. 1400 AM is my hypothetical broadcast frequency for the circumcision gospel, and 92.1, the uncircumcision gospel. So for the first time in that church, someone was broadcasting on the 92.1 frequency. Never before this woman heard the 92.1 frequency. Now, her antenna was vibrating like crazy. It was going nuts. For the first time, she received a signal that jived with what she was born to hear, and she couldn't take it. I mean, she was filled with joy and came up to me. "I heard my gospel for the first time." Why is that? Because it had never been broadcast before. And so I saw that day at that Restoration Bible Church a microcosm of first century drama. This was first century drama, because back in that day there were two gospels going out, front burner, both of them at the same time, the circumcision and the uncircumcision. Now, Peter had an antenna for 1400 AM, as did almost all the, not all the Jews, but the remnant, those who were destined to hear it. Their antennas tuned to 1400 AM. And whenever they read the prophets, whenever they heard the law in the Hebrew scriptures, their antennas vibrating. So they're getting the message. All right, now a few of the Jews, let's just take Saul as an example, who was to become Paul. He's born with both antennas. Peter, no. Peter is only born with the 1400 receiver, 1400 AM. That's the only thing he can hear. Saul is born with the 1400 AM receiver, but he's also born with the 92.1 FM. Nobody ever heard that modulation. Nobody ever heard of it. It was unheard of that anyone could even broadcast on that frequency modulation. So when Saul is on the road to Damascus and the signal 92.1 comes beaming from heaven for the first time in Earth's history, he was the only one in receiving distance with that antenna. He fell to the ground. So stunned was he by hearing his message. And the Lord said, when Saul asks, "Who are you?" "I am the Lord. I am the one you are persecuting." It's tough for you. Tough for you to kick against it, isn't it? And he was kicking against what he knew deep in his heart the whole time, but what he couldn't know, in another sense, couldn't accept because he had never heard it. So, and this was the first time in history that, and the only time, listen to this, the first and only time in history that the 92.1 frequency, the gospel of the uncircumcision, was broadcast directly from heaven. From this point forward, its caretaker and its broadcaster was Saul, soon to become the Apostle Paul in Acts chapter 13. His calling is in Acts chapter 9. And so he receives it. He gets it. And now he begins to broadcast at 92.1. The believing Jews, those who believed in Jesus Christ of the circumcision, they did not understand it. They clashed with everything they knew. It's like trying to get somebody raised on Lawrence Welk to dance to Elvis. Here's Lawrence Welk. And all of a sudden, you ain't nothing but a hound dog. You're crying all the time. Ain't you nothing but a hound dog. You're crying all the time. Ain't nothing but a hound dog, baby. Ain't no friend of mine. It said you was hot. And then, what is this? What is this music? They don't get it. And they reject it. But some were born, like Barnabas. There's another Jew who was born with a 92.1 antenna. But for their whole life, they could never exercise it because it was never broadcasting. Now, beams from heaven. Saul gets it, becomes Paul. Now he broadcasts it. Other people get it. Once they get it, they can be broadcasters. They can be broadcasting units. They can be their own radio stations. I'm a radio station. I have the 92.1 frequency, and I'm broadcasting it today, right now. Others have it. Sheridan has it. Pilkington has it. Hill has it. Flanders has it. Others have it. You have it. You tell your friends, you have it. I don't know your name, but you have it. And so you give it to people. And it's first century drama. Now, here's the difference, is I believe that even though the circumcision evangel is not the active evangel, it's an evangel in waiting, and it is still going out, and it is still being received by people with the 1400 AM antenna, namely your friends, your family. They hear James. They love the book of James. One of my ex-relatives loved the circumcision writings, loved the book of James. James, James. They loved the low spiritual level of James. They love how James always took the relative and not the absolute viewpoint. They loved how James said that faith without works is dead because they loved to work. We love to work, Martin. All right, go work, so work away so you have an antenna for 1400. Don't condemn me because I'm on a higher frequency. I'm listening to Elvis and the Beatles and the Kinks and the Rolling Stones on 92.1, and I'm digging this frequency. I was born to hear this frequency. I'm a rock and roller. You might be Lawrence Welk. You might be of the Fathers, the traditional thing. You know, boom, ding, ding, boom. You might be waltzing with Strauss or whoever. You know, you might be back there with Beethoven's Fifth Symphony. I don't know. All I know is that I'm into Pat Benatar, Chrissy Hynde, Joan Jett. I love those chick rockers. Absolutely love them. Blondie, a chick with a guitar. I mean, that's the soulish equivalent of the gospel of the uncircumcision. I'm sorry. I know that's soulish. The uncircumcision gospel is spiritual, but I'm soulish and spiritual right now. I'm a mixture, you see. I only have a measure of the spirit. So in the meantime, I listen to rock and roll to get me through this eon, and I eat dark chocolate. So, you know, more power to me. Thank you very much. And if you don't have an antenna for it, here's the thing. I'm going to stop looking down on you. I'm going to stop criticizing you. Because here's the thing with the Concordant Publishing concern. They used to say, well, if you believe Israel truths, you're just stealing Israel's goods. You're robbing hamburger from Israel's grocery cart. Leave Israel things to Israel, you take in the uncircumcision gospel. But my point is, what if somebody from way back, like that guy in Iowa, is a member of Israel, is part of the lost 10 tribes of Israel? And then let's say this, he has an antenna for 1400 AM, and that's what he can hear. And that's all he can hear. He hears Paul's message, and he doesn't get it. You know, he can't get that, he can't get the beat. He's just not Lawrence Welk, but a bubble machine, he's all about it. Loves it. Band of Skulls, not so much. So I say that these people are responding legitimately to their evangel. They do not have an antenna to receive Paul because they weren't born with one. You're designated beforehand for this, or you're not. Those of the circumcision are chosen from the disruption of the world. Those of the uncircumcision are chosen from before the disruption of the world. I got verses for that in The First Idiot in Heaven. If you have not read that book, why? Why haven't you? It's a great book. It's the best book on the Apostle Paul in existence. So I really recommend you read it. In the meantime, I am exhausted on the lost 10 tribes of Israel. I'm not exhausted. I'm full of energy. I could talk about it for another 12 days. But I've exhausted my resources for now on this topic. So tomorrow we're going to get back to the book of Hebrews. Thanks for tuning in. I forget where we are in Hebrews. I think we're around chapter 8. We'll find out tomorrow. At least I'll find out at the same time you do.
Forget for a moment that salvation has absolutely nothing to do with chance. It has to do with the Son of God dying a most horrible death on a Roman stake. That's what salvation has to do with. That's the opposite of chance. That's like something that actually paid the price for everyone. That's not chance. And yet, it's still presented as a chance. Strange. But the really crazy part, if that's not crazy enough, the really crazy part of this general invitation business is that those who believe it call it, are you ready for this? People who believe this nonsense of expecting helpless people to help themselves, they call it salvation by grace. Yeah, I'm not kidding. That's what they call it. Salvation by grace. I don't know, it kind of sounds to me like salvation by being strong enough and smart enough to get into God's car while God is closing his eyes, plugging his ears, and humming to himself. That's what it sounds like to me. And I have a picture of God. I have an illustration of God. And he is pulled up to the burning house. You got to see this. There it is. Okay. There it is. All right. I'll put it up here. You can see it better. And the caption says, absolutely, totally helpless invalid. I'll give him 10 more minutes. Now that is funny. Absolutely, totally helpless invalid. I'll give him 10 more minutes, yeah. Maybe, why don't you give him 20 more minutes? Why don't you give him 20 more years? A totally helpless invalid. You could give 200 years and they will not come because they can't.